You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, from the coast of this wonderful show. And joining me for our week show from the West Indianapolis Community News and Forbes.com, Mr. Tony East. Tony, how you doing post New Year's? We're in the 2021. Are you excited to put 2020 behind us?
The first weekly show of 2021. I am excited for 2021. I like New Year's. It's like, even if you don't have a resolution or something, it's exciting. You know, it's just like, awesome. You know, turn the page.
It feels like an ability to restart something.
Even if you're, yeah, exactly. And today we get to talk about the Pacers restarting without one of their best players, which is not exciting at all, but that's okay.
Yeah. So, was it Thursday? I believe it was announced TJ Warren had surgery on his
announced he was going to have
surgery.
I don't know when it's actually happening.
On his left foot. That has been his plantar fasciitis foot, I believe. They call it a small stress fracture, I believe was what.
Yeah. Small navicular stress fracture.
Yeah. The exact verbiage. And what it does is basically means that, I mean, we have no timetable. That's the first thing. So like, right. We don't know whether this is it's a shortened season. So even if it's 6 months, it's basically the whole season. So, but what it does is it basically sets the Pacers back one of their starters and really sets in a domino effect. We've seen Aaron Holiday start now. We'll see. We'll talk about Jeremy Lamb effect on this too, but it does create this sort of issue. But at the same time, we were texting about it, and the first thought you gave to me was this team should be able to overcome this because they are that deep, right?
So they will be worse, obviously. I'm not saying like, no problem, like whatever. I predicted this dude would be an all-star before the season started. Obviously, it's a huge loss. TJ Warren is really good. They literally lost they beat the Cavs, I guess, without him. But they lost the first game since it was announced because, and this is kind of what you said, they're a little less – or they're more predictable, right? They have less variance of what they can do in a possession. We saw against the Knicks kind of exactly what Warren helps with is they had a lot of bad plays against the Knicks. And when the play dies, sometimes they can just give the ball to TJ Warren and he can get a decent shot out of it. He's good at that ISO stuff. He's good at chaotic shots and transition, stuff like that. They didn't have that. So when things went stale against the Knicks, they got lucky to hit some of the threes they did in the second half to even be in that game again. So it's a big loss. However, the lineups with Aaron Holiday and Oladipo and Brogdon have been pretty good this year. Aaron Holiday was pretty bad against the Knicks, so maybe that the numbers have changed. But in the first five games, they'd outscored teams by 17 in just 20 minutes with that trio on the floor, right? So they can plug into their starting lineup and still have effective groups. It's when they mix and match and when they go to the bench and closing time. There are a lot of situations where they're worse, but they can mitigate it to an extent that it isn't brutal, especially with, like you said, Lamb potentially coming back soon.
Yeah, I think we should make it clear. I mean, outside of that, third quarter against Boston on Tuesday, he has not looked very good the first four games, or three. I guess he played the first three games.
He had 23 against the Bulls. He was good in that game, I thought.
I just thought he's looked a little hobbled. I mean, he
definitely
looks
has.
He's playing at, let's say, 80% of his peak. And not that he's
I agree with
bad,
that.
But I think the player he was going to be this season was not going to be maybe the same player he was last year, right? Even, like, I mean, I think if he was 100% healthy, he could have gotten better even, but I think what was clear with whatever foot thing, it was going to keep him at, let's say, 70 to 80% of his peak self, which means if this surgery gets him back to 100% by next year's time, it might be, in the long run, better. Obviously, it'd be good to have him this year because they're now down to kind of eight solid rotation guys, and they're going to probably play Keelan Martin against the Knicks. We'll see if they go to Sumner for a little bit. We're waiting on Land coming back, but it does sort of screw with the depth a little bit.
Right.
And he was a valuable player who they could just kind of throw out there when they needed to find some offense, right? He's a very much a one-man offense, right? So if you're struggling, whatever, you could just throw him out there with the bench unit sometimes, right? You know, in some lineup, and he could just score. And that was really good. His defense was getting better, and he was, just as a player, was making improvements that sets him back from that, like, trajectory. But I guess the thing encouraging, I guess, by it is that it doesn't seem like it's, like, a crazy major injury, right? He didn't, snap his ankle or anything like that, or even kind of a major, you know, injury to a knee or not. It's a small kind of foot thing that – we don't know how long it's going to be, but it could be not as long as we think, and it could put him to 100% on the path to being 100% faster than it kind of this like rest and wait
dealing with plantar for forever.
Yeah, I mean it's tough to go with this like Sabonis. Like I think the kind of injury he has, stress fractures especially, is you can like just let them heal by waiting, or you can there's something you can do to make him better, right? And with Sabonis, yeah, he was able just to kind of wait on it, I think, because basically he hurt his foot in July, late July, and didn't play until December, right? So he had the time to sit down and just let it be, right? But Warren doesn't have that luxury right now because it's the season and he wants to play. And so, you know, if we'll see how long the surgery puts him out for. If it's only, let's say, 2 to 3 months, at least gets him back towards the end of the regular season and for a playoff run, and that's really the goal. But I guess what I would say, I don't think it necessarily should hurt them in terms of overall regular season wins. They should be able to still get to a decent number. But if it's a really tight race, it could make a difference, right? It could be just between being the 6 or 7. But I think, in general, they should be able to overcome it a little bit once they get Lamb back and stuff like that and sort of just maybe they make a move for somebody else, something like that. But they should be, they're a good enough team. They have good enough 8 players. They should be able to overcome it at least for a little while.
Yeah, so the place to go, as you talk about the 8 guys, Aaron Holiday is one of the 8. I think he's the first place to go because he started with Depot out in that Celtics game and then with Warren out against the Cavs and the Knicks. Again, that 3-guard lineup has been good. Even in this Knicks game that he just started in place of Warren, I have the Cavs one up too. I guess I could do both. He was really bad against the Knicks. His shots were fine. Like, he had good looks the whole game. He missed all of them, which even if they're good looks, it's a bad game if you miss all 6 shots, right? He didn't play that well, and they still played the Knicks even in 25 minutes with him out there because he's a useful player against the Cavs. He made 4 of his 6 shots instead in his 23 minutes, and they were plus 11 with him on the floor, right? Like, he fits in the starting lineup pretty well, I think. That 3-guard lineup works. They get enough ball movement and shooting around Sabonis' play and Turner's defense to succeed. And I think that, while worse than having Warren, obviously, is fine. And I think Aaron can do that. Do you agree?
Yeah, so we should make this clear. Aaron is starting, but Justin Holiday's playing the bulk of the minutes.
Yeah, Justin Holiday closed last night, too.
Yeah, I mean, Justin Holiday's at 27 minutes.
He played more minutes than Aaron in both games since
so,
Warren missed.
I mean, like, I think my first thought was like, oh, he'll start Justin. But I think they start Aaron because they want Justin with the bench. But they're closing with Justin. It doesn't really matter, right? We should clarify that, like, Aaron Holiday is starting, but he's not playing all the extra minutes. And his stat line, it's been 6 games. He doesn't have a great stat line right now. And simply that could be, you know, if his 3-point shot starts falling at a better rate, you know, right now he's shooting 26% from 3, which I don't think will hold the rest of the season, especially if he plays in the starters lineup where he's the 5th option at times, or maybe the 4th, depending where you count Turner, you know, that should go up a little bit. And if he, you know, it could get closer to, you know, the 35 to 38 from 3, then he becomes very playable. He's been a decent defender, I thought. You know, he's not obviously Warren's level, but he's, you know, he had a nice block shot against the Knicks, and he's been, you know, adequate out there, and he hasn't been lost. Let's put that right. You don't play out there and feel like he's an extreme liability. And they're big enough with both the centers that they don't really have to worry about the rebound as much. The rebound is just an issue for the team in general. It wouldn't matter if it was Warren or Holiday or Jalen, right, whoever at the 3 spot. They just have a rebounding problem that we can talk about, you know, when we do kind of the breakdown of the week. So yeah, I mean, I think
segment, we'll get to that. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think him being in the lineup is not necessarily a bad thing. He's got to play better. And I just wonder if he's just kind of having a bad start. Because we've seen this room, right? Last season, even, he kind of wasn't great to like the 7th, 8th, or 10th game. And then he got going for really a couple of months. He was really solid. So if he, you know, becomes that player again for 1 or 2 month stretch, then he's good. You know, I think the issue to me becomes with Aaron Holiday is, well, what happens when they don't play Vic and Warren? Then, you know what I mean? Then they're getting less guys. Like, does this change some of that calculation of when they have to, they rest Vic or whatnot? Because that was the luxury of having Warren, was like, even if you didn't have Vic, you still had a really good offensive guy out there at all times. And they still do have it to some extent in Malcolm Brogdon and in Sabonis. But, like, you're just a little bit less depth every time. And, you know, once you're down 2 of your 9, that becomes more difficult and so on. And so, you know, I think we'll see how that plays out. But that's my kind of first concern when I think about the Warren injury.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think my concern more falls to something we've seen frequently this season and now that will be more relevant is, like, In this, some of this is on Goga being hurt too and Lamb being out, but like against the Knicks, just a random game against the Knicks, Victor's playing 37 and a half minutes. Brogdon plays over 41 minutes. Sabonis plays 39 minutes. 2 nights before that, they play the Cavs. Sabonis is at 36. ESPN logs his minutes. That game has 36 minutes and 60 seconds. Sabonis played 37 minutes. Turner played over 33. Victor played over 34. Malcolm played 37 minutes. That's crazy. That is a huge minutes load. Especially because with Warren out, they have to squeeze someone else in there. And because they don't have Lamb yet, Keelan Martin is getting these bench minutes. And they, okay, whatever, it's 10 minutes. Keelan Martin played 11:01 against the Cavs and played 4:16 against the Knicks. But that isn't enough to plug these starters' minutes. So they're basically playing an 8.5-man rotation and just exhausting these guys, right? So they're just so tired in the fourth quarter that Bjorkgren's like, even per his own admission, just subbing guys out for a few minutes to get him rest. So that's where Warren's biggest – we're not having him as the biggest impact to me is, one, Keelan Martin hasn't been very good in his two chances. I think he'll get a leash of about 3 to 5 games to show he can fit with the second unit. If not, they'll go Sumner. They should have
got some
Sumner.
Bad luck, too. He had a couple of shots that maybe should have fallen. The disc wouldn't.
Definitely. Two layups he should have made. But I think Sumner should have got the job anyway here. Obviously, I think he's very good. But we'll see. Keelan, again, deserves a chance. The new coach can pick who he wants. I'll let him have a few more games. But if he can't play 10 minutes even, they're just – without Warren, they're just going to have to hammer these starters without Goga and Lamb for a few weeks. And that is scary from an injury standpoint, too. So, one, the bench is less effective. And, two, they're just really over-reliant on their starters without him to play extra minutes. So, we'll see how if that has any ripple effects, right? Thankfully, they have a 2-day gap off this coming week and no back-to-backs. So that's good, but yeah, they need more bench production, and they really, because they can't put Aaron with that group as much, they're just not going to have it.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a case too, honestly, if Vic had, you know, made 7 instead of 6 and had 3 shots tonight, or was 0 of 12 for so long.
They wouldn't even need it to
bring him in so fast off the bench. But they were getting to a point in that third, fourth quarter where they could have blown it away if Vic had been able to make. He was like 0 for 12, right? He made 2 shots in the last 2 minutes and they didn't count. So he was really like 1 of 14 for most of the night. So, I mean, you can make a case, but then, you know, so I don't know. I think the problem is they don't have like some like cakewalk opponents, right, coming up. I mean, they play New Orleans, Houston, Phoenix, Sacramento, Golden State. Maybe Golden State stinks. Who knows? Portland, Phoenix, L.A., Dallas, Orlando, Toronto. Then they play Charlotte in late January. But then you might get Lamb back if you're lucky. So, like, you know, before with Cleveland, right, the Cleveland game, they still play a lot of minutes. But they were able maybe in Chicago, they were able to kind of give starters a little bit of a break. Like Vic, I think, only played 20-something minutes against the Bulls. So they just don't have that, and that's going to be an issue. So I'm with you on the whole kind of minutes thing. We'll see how much they do that. He might have to just start, you know, really pulling the bench, playing Martin and playing Sumner and trying to play Jakar a little bit, just trying to dispel guys a little bit in that second or third quarters just to get these guys be able to play the last 9 minutes of the game, let's say.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Lamb's return could not come sooner because I think now – this could be wrong, but I think now what's going to happen is when Lamb comes back, he'll start. He'll hop in to the starting five in Aaron's place, and then they'll go with the bench unit they had last year. That seems like makes a lot of sense to me because we know that bench unit's good. We know Lamb can fit okay as like the fourth option with the starters like last year. I think that's what's going to happen, but I understand that he could be substantially worse coming off an ACL and maybe not be that good. So
to me, it depends how Aaron Holiday plays. Aaron Holiday has 3 weeks to earn that spot until Warren comes back.
He does.
Right? He's got a chance to do it. Just like, you know, I think Martin has a chance to earn his minutes and same with Sumner. But I think to me, Lamb is now was a luxury, right? Now he's like a necessity. That's the difference. And we'll see how he's coming back. I mean, we still have to see a timeline for Warren's injury. Have you heard anything on a timeline? I have no idea how long a foot injury is based on the severity of it is. You know what I mean?
Just from Googling, first of all, the trouble with this is it's pretty rare for basketball players. And the only guys who've got it are big men, right? The guys who I've seen – well, I guess Kevin Durant also, but the guys – he had the Jones fracture, which is a little different. But they had – like Marc Gasol had this, Bull had this. Were I think the most two recent guys I could find. And they missed a while. They both missed quite a while. So if I had to guess, I'd say 12 weeks, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, you know what they also say with kind of foot injuries, you really want to make sure 100% covered because as an NBA player, your most important thing outside of your hand is your foot. And really it's your feet are more important than your hands because your hands are not constantly being like put pressure on them at all times.
Right.
So yeah, we'll see how long
he's out. Instead of talking about what might happen, I would like to talk about what just did happen last week.
Yeah, so let's do this. We're going to take one quick break, and then we're going to kind of break down the week and talk about our thoughts through the first 6 games. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. So we are now towards the end of football season, in the heart of the college football bowl season, national championship in a week, and then we've got obviously NBA games every day, and there is one place that has you covered, and the one place you can trust to place a bet, and that is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag, and if you use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus. So this week, we're recording this on a Sunday afternoon, so I won't give you the Colts line, but I at this point, it looks like Buffalo is going to win. Hopefully, the Colts will beat the Jags. I'll be wrong come Monday, probably. But if they do, the Colts will probably travel to Buffalo for that first-round playoff game, and I like that bet for some reason. I think just the experience with Phil Rivers versus Josh Allen. So whatever the money line is, I would go look at that bet. And right now, like I said, go to betonline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. All right, Tony. So through the first 6 games, my first thought, and this is going in the direction you might not kind of want to go to start with, but is
Oh.
Sabonis and Turner seem actually pretty adequate, if not actually a pretty positive when they're on the court together. I have not seen this like felt this like crushing double plotting, as Caitlin Cooper would say, lineups. It seems like both have become better perimeter defenders in an extent where they're not like constantly being roasted. They get beat sometimes, but not to like the exploiting extent. And offensively, Sabonis obviously been off the charts at times. And then Turner, they've definitely used him in some better ways and has had some pretty solid stat lines when it comes down to it.
I think they've been good. This is the best they've looked together for sure. So the exact numbers, in case you're curious, they are plus 31 in 121 minutes together through six games this season. That's incredible. 283 points on 254 possessions on offense. I'm going to do a quick Google, and apparently I don't know how to type a division sign, but that is an offensive rating of 111.4, which is fantastic, right? So that is a good place to start to me, because they're going to both keep playing a lot, even with Warren out. And the fact that they've been able to – the thing about Goga's return, even if Goga isn't that useful, getting Sabonis down to 34 minutes where he can just be all of his effectiveness all the time is really important. But they can get by with just these two guys because, like you just said, against the Knicks, Turner was probably better than Sabonis, and they needed him to be. He shot well from three. He played amazing defense again. He's still the NBA blocks leader. And then Sabonis is just a passing machine. He's been a great defender right around the basket, even though Turner's been amazing at like running around and defending pick and rolls and everything. But they've both done really well in their exact roles. Bjorkren's got them playing in the way that two bigs should play, that these two bigs should play together. He lets Sabonis take it up the floor and transition. He lets Turner cut to the basket and take the
threes. Yeah, it's been the biggest thing for me is that exactly, the cutting.
Yeah, Turner. And shot fake and dribble a little bit, right? Like, this is what they – Turner took 9 threes against the Knicks. Like, that is – I know the team took 50 and it was a ridiculous –
It's a little too many for my taste, but yes.
I don't want to get too nitty-gritty about one game, but
– Yeah, I'm with there.
You know, we can if we want. They lost. They deserve to be ripped. But – I agree with you that this is as close to actualizing what they should be doing on the court together as we've ever gotten. And there's a reason that the team's been good this year, despite up and down play from some other guys, as those two have been really good all season.
Yeah. So the starting five, when Warren was there, had a plus 7.9 net rating, which actually is just about a point less, or sorry, 2 points less than the kind of bench unit with Sabonis, which is actually, compared to last year's, like night and day. Like, the bench unit last year with Sabonis was like, I think, probably a plus 8 or 9, and the starters were like only a plus 2 or 3. So that's pretty good. With Aaron Holiday, it's not been as great, but they've only played 30 minutes together. And I just give that a little bit of time because Aaron Holiday just got put in as a starter. But really the best lineup for the Pacers, which I think is something we didn't really hit the first minute, which we'll see. But when they go Oladipo, McDermott, both centers, and Brogdon, they're a plus 36 net rating in 12 minutes. And so I think what we're starting to see is, if you put the two centers with three, you know, with Vic Brogdon, and then you want to name either Justin Holiday or you want to put McDermott there, it becomes a really good lineup. Like, it just yep. does, because the centers can guard in the perimeter. Turner's been a monster at the rim. I mean, he has been deterring shots left and right. I mean, he even does a block of a shot, he's just like a menacing guy on there. He's really starting to get kind of reputation of being like, we really want to go at him all the time. And then offensively, they're keeping Turner engaged enough, right? They're letting him shoot threes when he's open. They're letting him cut it at times. And then other times, they're just letting Sabonis do his thing, right? They're running offense through him, pick and rolls with Brogdon, rolls with Oladipo. And Sabonis, to me, is making that extra pass this year, which, you know, last year he kind of did, but really this year you can tell it's been beating his head. Hey, you get double teamed, just kick it out, right? And let it kick around back to you, because that's been their best thing. And to me, Sabonis even has, at times, has looked kind of okay shooting, like he's a little short on a couple jumpers here that he shouldn't make or like that. And so if he cleans that up, which I think he will over time, I mean, this, we're looking at a lineup that, you know, I think you were probably higher on it than me before the year, but that, like, I don't know. I mean, it seems like it could work for the future, I guess is what I mean. It just seems like it's going to work. There's no concern of like, that kind of doesn't work. It's like, this works just fine. They got to get the other pieces around it to actually make it work, and not the other way around.
Yeah. We've always talked about, is this the best they could play? And under McMillan, they absolutely should not have had two centers. And under Bjorken, we still thought they should probably have a forward instead of a center, but he deserved the chance to coach Miles after they didn't get Hayward or whatever. And it's working. They've been really good together. Part of the reason the teams have been so good is because that has worked together. And part of the reason the Knicks were able to beat the Pacers on whatever night last night was, I don't even know, days, this 3-day week, it's coming off of Saturday, is because Julius Randle was awesome defending Sabonis. Like, I can't believe I even just said that sentence out loud. But that was the first game in which a team actually really threw a scheme at Sabonis to make him think and slow down just a tiny bit, right? They would pinch a guy in from the corner to slow down him rolling. And that's why the Pacers got so many corner threes that game. They didn't make enough of them. They made a lot of them, but not enough of them. And then they sent double teams on him a lot, and he found Turner on a few cuts. He found a few guys on nice cuts. But that was the best the team's done to slow Sabonis down, and Turner took advantage. He hit seven shots. He had 17 points. If Turner had even an okay rebounding game, I think the Pacers win. But, yeah, they found a way that for both of them to be good, even when one is slowed down. They found a way for Turner to be good. So those two are really yin and yanging in a good way on offense. That's making the team good. But I know you wanted to talk about rebounding, which is why I just mentioned that.
Yeah, well, and also you say Sabonis' three-point percentage also helps out a ton.
He's making a lot of them. He's like 57, right?
Yeah, 57%. Turner's 25%, 22%, I'm sorry, right now. So we'll see if that goes up. Yeah, so rebounding. So that's been the Pacers' biggest problem. They got killed in the offensive glass last night, especially. They had 10 offensive rebounds versus their 5. And I don't know. I mean, this has been a continual problem for the past 2-3 years now. I'm trying to think how long they've been had this issue. And I don't know what the solution is. They got out rebounded yesterday 60-37. That's not very good.
Brutal.
Wow. I believe against Boston, when they did beat them, it was like even. So like they don't necessarily need to win the rebounding battle to win games, because it just feels like, I don't know what the issue is, to be honest. I just, the rebounding is killing them. That's been kind of their one weakness, I guess, the whole time.
Yeah, they only had so some of it's like, I always check rebounding opportunities first, right? Because so let's back up a little bit. The Knicks shot 10% better from the field in this game against the Pacers. So like there's more opportunities when the Pacers miss 60% of their shots for the Knicks to get rebounds. There's going to be a little difference there, but the 10 offensive rebounds from the Knicks misses, that's what's brutal. Elfrid Payton, a guard, got 3, right? So Turner had a bad rebounding night. He said that first thing, or maybe not first thing, but pretty early in his media session, he knew it. It was bad. He dropped a few like that were noticeably bad, like just grab the damn ball. But some of the guards had bad rebounding nights. Aaron, this is where not having Warren hurts. Aaron Holiday only had 2. Brogdon only had 3. He's normally a better rebounder than that. That's why Elfrid Payton getting 3 was so killer. And then Mitchell Robinson just destroyed them. He had 6 on his own. So their defensive rebounding was not, like, so brutally bad compared to the Knicks. I mean, the Knicks obviously did better. It was 41-27 in the numbers. But it wasn't so brutally bad that I think that's why they lost. It's that they gave up these 10 easy offensive rebounds and only were able to get 5 themselves. Also bonus. Some of his are his own misses, too. So
yeah, the second-chance points killed him. That was
killed him. Loss. Absolutely killed him.
Because they scored more threes. They had more free throw attempts. They had more forced turnovers. They literally just lost the rebounding and then the shooting percentage battle. And lost the shooting percentage battle because of offensive rebounds at times.
Yeah. They had fewer turnovers in this game, right? They basically matched the bench points. They shot well from 3 on a lot of attempts. They figured out what the Knicks were doing and were able to get the shots. And then they couldn't get timely stops. Like the whole game, it felt like they could not get a lead. They were just tied, and they just got killed on the glass. And even against the Cavs, I don't think they rebounded that well in a game they won. The Cavs had 43 rebounds. The Pacers had 44. And that's a game where the Pacers shot better. So they had more rebounding opportunities. And they barely even win on that game on the glass, including the Cavs getting 11 offensive rebounds. And JaVale was insane and on the glass. Drummond was insane on the glass. So once again, even as the Pacers win games and shoot well and have a nice offensive performances, they lost to the Celtics. They had 7 fewer rebounds, right? They're getting killed. They're back to their last year problem of not being good enough on the glass. And Turner was bad against the Knicks on the glass per his own admission, but he did fine on the glass in the other games, given his role and where he stands on the court. You know, I think 7 rebounds is about right for him. So I think their guard rebounding's been weak. And I think that, as a result of them giving up a lot of a few shots at the rim due to Turner's good defense, is there's a lot of long rebounds and they have not been good at getting those. Their guard rebounding has been bad this year. So they have to be better rebounding, and that's what they focused on that in their film today, Sunday.
So, yeah, so hopefully we'll fix it. That.
They have to be better on the glass, especially Steven Adams is coming up. He's going to swallow them whole if they don't get better.
Yeah, and I think before we end this, we should give one quick shout out to the 2 guards. I know Vic had a bad night, although I will say for having a bad night, he got the line. He didn't make he at one point he realized he couldn't make a shot, so he just kept going to the rim and getting fouled, which is the right move when you can't make shots. Which I think before I was, especially with the injury, I was afraid he wouldn't be kind of gun-shy about that. But Brogdon and him this year are both averaging 20-plus points. Brogdon has been amazing. I mean, he's shooting 53-45 from the field right now. But both of them are basically shooting, in the mid-40s and threes. And that won't hold the whole season, but they're both playing really well. And kind of, I think, at this point, it feels like reaching the kind of the peak that we – hope they would together, right? Kind of becoming the 1-2 pairing we really thought they could be at this point. And so that's something we're shining. I mean, Brogdon carried them last night. I mean,
I get why the answer is Sabonis, but if you wanted to argue Brogdon's been the best pitcher this year, especially after that Knicks game
last night, I might
probably hear it.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I'm why the Warren Drake, again, going back to just their beginning, it kind of hurts the most because it feels like the three-headed monster is a bonus Barnoldi, but looks really good. You thought, oh, you get Warren last year back in there, and all of a sudden you've got this, like, just super dynamic offense everywhere. And so they're going to have to carry those. They're going to have to carry more of the load than they did before, but, I mean, hopefully then we won't have some issues with shot selection, right? You know, Oladipo will get his 15 or 16 shots a game that he wants and won't have to worry about taking from somebody else at this point. But the two guards have looked really good, and I think, to me, just, like, long-term-wise, if – you know, you can make a case that Brogdon's a really good pairing for Oladipo. It really helps sell him in the long run, right? That they can be kind of the next John Wall, Bradley Beal of the East in some ways. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I hope they can get to that level. That'd be great. Depot has been hitting a lot of threes. I'm worried that that's carrying his efficiency and scoring numbers a little bit. You know, I don't think he's going to maintain 45%. Same with Brogdon, honestly. So
Brogdon shooting 53% in the field, I think, even if he goes down a little
bit. Depot's I'm on Brogdon. Still,
yeah.
Yeah, but they're both shooting a little bit above what I think is reasonable to expect from them this year. You know, Depot especially, hitting three threes a game, like if he can do it, great. But I don't think he can. And Depot's actually been pretty good passing, 4.4 assists per game, more than I thought he would have. Rebounding nice as well, but I don't think his three is going to maintain at three made threes a game, even if he has been working on a shot since he got hurt. I think they're going to be a little less effective, but they've been good this year, and that's a good sign. This is kind of closer to what we expected, like you said, their fit to be when they signed Brogdon. That was part of the appeal. So let's see if that carries. That's been a big reason for their success, too, though. They always have someone good at handling the ball, holding the ball on the team.
Yeah, and Depot's 51% at the rim this year, or inside 3 feet on his shot, which his peak was like 69%, so that's still not that level. But that's to a level where we're starting to get to a point where it feels like it's like good, right?
Depot from 0 to 3 feet at 57%.
Yeah, that's what I said. His peak was like 60. His peak was 69 in 20.
Yep.
That 1 year, his great season, 2017-18. So he's not there at his peak yet, but him being at that 57 is good, and hopefully maybe inch that up even more. And he's right. Getting a good amount of foul calls too this season. So through the first 16, even though Vic has been – he was bad against the Knicks, he's had – even at his best, he had nights like this where he'd go 2 of 15. Like, I do remember that. He wasn't, like, perfect every night. But he's starting to get to a level where you're feeling like, oh, he's back to, like – his old self in a way, and he's never played this good of a guard, right? He was last time he was on the court this good, he's playing with Darren Collison, and before that he's playing with Russell Westbrook, who's better than Brogdon but not better in terms of pairing for him. Russell Westbrook is not a good fit for Oladipo, but Brogdon is a really good fit for him. So it's it'll be exciting to see as we get kind of move forward into this week.
I'd like to honorable mention one more player before we preview the upcoming week.
Okay.
Justin Holiday is hitting 80-something% of his two-pointers this year. So his three hasn't quite materialized. It's about league average from three. It hadn't even been bad. He had 4 or 5 against the Knicks last night. Had a good week. I think he was 7 for 14 to half his threes this week. Has hit a crazy percent of his twos. Has fit in with the closing group and has played through solid defense. So even as the three hasn't been there, still open up to that new deal. Good job, Jess.
Yeah, he's been money from that like 15-foot range. Like he
shot fakes threes, one between leg dribble, money every time. He's nailing them.
Yeah, good. He's been good. Yeah, I'm with you there. So I think with him, I'm sure to see, does he start getting even more minutes? He's at like 26. He's end up playing 30 with Warren out or whatnot. So we'll see what happens to that, though. So, all right, let's do this. Let's take one more break, and then we're going to preview the Pacers' three upcoming games this week. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by our wonderful friends over at Built Bar. We've been talking about Built Bar for almost the entire year now. As we head into 2021, we're going to keep talking to them because they make this amazing protein bar that comes in 18 amazing flavors. The bars are 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. They're great for somebody being healthy conscious. You're trying to lose or maintain weight. They're a great treat to indulge in. And the bars are low calorie, low sugar, and high in protein. My favorite one I continue to say is the peanut butter brownie one, which has 19 grams of protein, only 180 calories, and 5 grams of sugar. And right now, go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Bar.com. Tony, are we able to now do net ratings? Can you do the net ratings test now that we're enough games in, or what's the deal?
So we can caveat them like crazy. We kind of have to with one of these teams this week, but it's fluky. Everything is fluky at this point of the year. One crazy game has your stats heavily influenced. Let's start with the Pelicans because this is kind of backwards of where I thought they would be. Because they have one huge loss and one huge win. So maybe their stats are kind of stable. But the Pelicans, Monday's Pacers opponent, are 20th in offense and 4th in defense and 26th in pace. I thought, one, with Eric Bledsoe and Zion Williamson and Lonzo Ball, they would play fast and they would score a lot of points and their defense would kind of suck. And their defense has been really good and the rest of the stuff has not been how I thought. So I don't really know what to make of the Pelicans. They've played a lot of good teams though, so there's a chance that their stats are actually kind of lowballing them. Outside of the Thunder, they've played Toronto, Miami, Phoenix, Toronto again, and San Antonio. So this Pelicans team's kind of legit at 4-2.
Yeah, so you posted the same podcast I did when who went on Zach Lowe's podcast from 538? What's the guy's name again?
Chris Herring.
Chris Harrington, he talked about the Pelicans a little bit and how Van Gundy would kind of make them sort of like do all the technical stuff right. And so you look at the team's rebounding specifically in fouls. So they rank first in the league in fouls per game, which I believe means that they're the best, right? They have the lowest amount of fouls per game.
Yes, correct.
And they rank third in total rebounds, sixth in defensive and ninth in offensive rebounds. And they let up the least amount of rebounds to opposing teams. So they do a lot of the like little things right. Right. They do. They're not, you know, and that's what a young team is hard to do, right? Young teams sometimes can be sort of flippant with like kind of like the technical stuff. But Van Gundy is that kind of coach. And that's why their defense is so high, I would guess, in the top five right now. Now we'll see if that holds. But the team seems to be doing a pretty good job of kind of fixing up some of the kind of edge pieces of their game. And they have enough talent between Ingram, between Zion to win some of these games. And they're, you know. Yeah. They look good. I mean, they beat Toronto last night, I believe.
Twice. Right? They beat Toronto twice.
Right. So they, you know, we'll see how they hold. We'll see what goes on going forward. But like Ingram last year established himself as a star. Now, I don't know if I'm going to call him top 20, top 25 player, whatever. But he established he's a really good player and up and coming and at 23 and that he, you know, is a force to reckon with. We'll see if Zion continues to sort of improve each year and become.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's so good athletically. It's you know, it's health and whatnot. But to me, they're just a solid team. They have like a lot of solid NBA players, right, between Bledsoe and all the way down to Redick, right? They've got just guys who, like, yeah, who you would say, like, Redick would be a rotation player on any of the top teams in the league. Same with Eric Bledsoe, although his playoff performances might get him benched on playoff time. But in the regular season, he would play a ton of minutes. I mean, he was playing on the best team in the league last year. So, yeah, I mean, they're on a night-to-night thing. We'll see what kind of team they show up on Monday. But they're definitely just, like, a more solid team than what – they, you know, I think what we thought coming in, what they were last year, at least in terms of just consistency night to night.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting game in terms of the Bjorkren effect because the Pelicans are first in the league giving up the fewest two-pointers at 41, and the Pacers lived at the rim until this Knicks game. And they're 30th giving up the most threes in the league at 44. So, again, early in the season, some of that could just be the product of the opponents you've played. I'll concede that. But if those are legit and they are giving up a lot of corner threes from the Pelicans people that I cover, this game could look a lot like the Knicks game in terms of how the Pacers shot profile works and what's available to them. So maybe we'll see a lot of Sabonis fulcruming as he rolls, not necessarily going to the rim, but looking for those corner shooters, looking for guys coming up on the wing and relocating. And then, yeah, the rebounding, they've been dominant and not giving up any. Steven Adams got dunked on for his contract this year. He probably did not deserve a first-round pick return in value and a massive extension. However, David Griffin as a GM just loves to have that guy. That's right, Tristan Thompson was his guy in Cleveland. He loves to have that bully rebounding guy alongside his stars, and that's why he got Steven Adams. Lo and behold, Adams has been a rebounding machine once again for this team, leads them at 9 per game, clears out space for Zion to get a bunch, clears out space for Josh Hart, averaging 8 rebounds a game. So this is kind of a fun overlap of both the vision of a coach and GM and an interesting back and forth between what Bjorkren wants to do. So I think that if they can not get smoked by 10 on the glass, which the Pels have done every game, the shots that the Pelicans want to give up could lead to the Pacers having a good offensive game. However, if Sabonis can't get going at the rim, that doesn't mean anything. So we'll see. It should be a fun one.
Well, and I think what I would say too with Adams in that way is – you know, I think Zion's future is definitely eventually playing stretch five-ish, but yes. I think he's too young.
I agree.
And you don't want to throw him to the wolves like that in that way, right? That's why you bring a guy like Adams, who sort of just serves as a little bit of like a transition, right, for the next 2 or 3 years, who protects Zion from some of the larger beatings night to night. And maybe in the playoffs you play him as that. But from night to night, you still kind of – in the NBA, it's kind of clear from night to night, you still need that kind of center because you don't want to put – you don't want to play your, you know, your young kind of guard or, you know, forward at that kind of – spot where he gets bullied and beat up every night because he won't last, right? And the key is in the playoffs, right? You can always make the change to last in the playoffs, but you don't want to have to do it during the regular season. I mean, you see that in Boston a little bit too, right? They wanted some more traditional centers because they needed somebody to help kind of protect Tatum from having to be, you know, bodied up against some of the bigger players all the time. So who is your butcher in this game? Is it Ingram?
You just said it, Zion.
Zion, okay.
Mine is Zion because as good as Turner and Sabonis have been together, this is interesting because either one of two things is going to happen. Either Turner's on Zion or Sabonis is on Zion. And Sabonis can probably handle Zion and his skills better than Turner. But then you have Turner on Adams, and Adams will just bully the shit out of Turner on the glass. And I don't think the Pacers want that. So I'm guessing we'll see Turner on Zion, and we'll see Sabonis on Adams. And I think Turner can do okay on Zion, but he's just so good. Easy 20 points a game for him almost every night. Such a good second jumper, quick burst to get by guys, that I think he's going to have a good, easy time getting points on basically whoever's on him, honestly, but especially
on Turner. If Turner can shut down Zion, that sort of makes it go a long way to talking about how Turner's defensive defense improved this year.
Maybe Turner's on Adams, maybe. But I don't know. Either one of those matchups is going to create some sort of mismatch, and I think that's why Zion's going to give them fits. So I think that. The other guy, there's only one other guy. So,
I mean, I would go with Ingram. He's shooting 42% from three. That probably won't hold, but if he gets into the 40s, that's how he goes from being a 24-point a game to 25
so good this year.
He just keeps improving. I mean, you look at his stat line. I bet you I don't have in front of me, but if you threw him next to Paul George, you would see a similar progression in points per game's growth over the years. And, I mean, he's just a really good player, and it makes that Anthony Davis trade worth it. I mean, to get a guy like Ingram's caliber for Davis makes that trade – you do that 9 out of 10 times, especially if you're going to lose Davis in 2 years. Can you have Ingram for, what, 5 right now? So – he's a good fit with Zion, and you know the Pacers have been getting killed by small forwards left and right. You know, and they got killed by Tatum on Tuesday night. I guess Randall's the one who kind of killed them. But Barrett's been killing them a little bit. He plays more guard. They just don't have the guy to defend them, right? They don't, especially without Warren. It's going to be Brogdon guarding that guy, or Oladipo, or if you're going to throw in Justin Holiday at times. So I mean, I just think Ingram, you know, could easily. I think last year he had a big in Pacers too. I mean, he could easily have 25, 30 points and. I don't know. I'm not sure that still doesn't mean they can't win, but it's just going to be hard to stop him at least.
Yeah, he's a good player. That's it. Especially without Warren, he'll be a tough guy to contain. They don't have the size to perfectly match up with this Pelicans team. I think the Pelicans starters are actually going to kind of handle the Pacers starters. That's why I'm not going to do my X Factor first, but I think this is a decent chance for a bench game. You go, though. X Factor.
So my X Factor, and I think you named it on already, I think it's Turner.
Yeah, he's got to be good.
Yeah, so I'm torn because I do think they want his rim protection, so they might put him on Adams, but I think also be really good to kind of let him be a perimeter-ish defender, if that makes sense. I mean, obviously Zion's not going to like serve the perimeter the entire time, but it's more of a face-up defensive strategy against him. And I think with them, with the Pacers, the kind of next level for them is figuring out, can Turner just like guard anybody, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, does that become the guy you throw in? You know, do you because Sabonis can do enough from protection, whatever, that, like, you know, in the last 2 minutes of the game, you throw Turner on, like, some of the best small forwards in the league, especially with Warren out and not having that guy. Now, I think you're probably still lean towards Brogdon, but I think Turner has each year improved defensively in that one-on-one ability, right? Especially we've been doing this podcast. I mean, I think that first year with this podcast, he was but, like, last year he was really solid, I thought. The last 2 years, really. And this year he looked a little better. Because if he can become that kind of defender, it's a whole other ceiling for him defensively, right? He goes from being, like, a really good around-the-rim defender to, like, just a really, really good defender. And it also could help maybe push him towards defensive player of the year even kind of level. So I just want to see what he can do. I mean, maybe he's not ready for it and he gets roasted and you don't do it, but I just want to see him try it. You know, I mean, that's one thing I think Jorgen has done a lot of. He just like tries things to see if they work instead of just like assuming they won't work.
Yeah, that's true. He's going to be important in this game. Plus, Zion and Adams are not awesome perimeter defenders. Zion will be, but not quite there yet. So if he can hit the threes, that could bend some defensive stuff. I kind of hinted at it. Mine's the bench in this game because, again, I think the Pel starters are really good. Josh Hart's been good this year too, but J.J. Redick can shoot. He's slow. Nikal Alexander-Walker, unproven, shoots a lot, misses a lot. Nicola Melli. His name is hard to say. They just call him Nico anyway. Really slow, only out there to shoot and isn't shooting, and Jackson Hayes is young and is a rim runner. Their bench can take advantage of that group. I can keep the Pacers in the game, give them a chance to win. They kind of have to because the starters are going to be very tough to beat for the Pelicans.
Yeah, I would agree. So do you count this as a win or a loss?
I picked loss preseason. I was going to put the Pels in the playoffs, and you talked me out of it, and I should have kept them in because they're going to make it. They're better than I thought even, so Pels are going to win.
I think you blame me for all your problems.
I do.
I just messed with you. I'm torn because I do think the Pacers do a nice job of coming after a loss. It's not like back-to-back, but it's a travel. I think I would pick loss in this one, too. I'm with you there. I just think the Pelicans are too good. And in New Orleans, not that the home crowd matters, but the traveling does.
Even if the Pacers are better than I thought, the Pelicans are too, and I think they match up poorly with them.
So. Yeah, and I just worry that one injury is going to take a few games for them to like readjust and figure out what their strategy is. It's a big injury. Okay, so the next game is they play the Houston Rockets. I have actually watched a little more Rockets than I usually would have this early season, just because I wanted to see James Harden because the dude's a little bit bigger than I think he was in previous years. So they're 10th in offensive rating, 24th in defensive rating. They're 2-2. Harden, when he plays, is really, really good.
Insane. 37 points a game in three games. He might be the best offensive player in basketball still. Yeah, the tough part about previewing the Rockets is they've kind of had guys in and out of the lineup. COVID stuff's been hitting them hard. Walt is recovering. I think someone was hurt. I forget who. They haven't really shown their full rotation. You know, Eric Gordon only started once. So it's been weird. But their guys who have played have looked incredible. You know, James Harden, again, 37 points a game is ridiculous. Christian Wood continues to look like one of those how the hell did he bounce around so much guys. I kind of know why. But anyway, bounced around a lot. Looks amazing for this team. 11 rebounds, 24 points. Ridiculous. John Wall already looks awesome. It's been two games, but still. Averaging 25-8. So they've gotten a lot from those guys. And Eric Gordon played well in his start. So their offense is just ridiculous. They have so many weapons. Their defense, just good enough with P.J. Tucker out there in Daniel House. They're really tough to beat. They're really tough team to beat when they have all their guys clicking. The problem is they don't always have every guy clicking. So we'll see what can maintain for them in this game.
Yeah. Harden didn't play Saturday, and a bunch of guys didn't play on Saturday. It's not a back-to-back. They play Dallas on Monday, and they play the Pacers Wednesday, so there's no issue there. We won't, you know, we'll see with that or whatnot. I mean, I don't think Harden's thing seems like it's a major injury, but who really knows? I guess my one thing, if I'm going to go like butcher-wise, is if Harden doesn't play, I just don't know where you go with this team. I guess you maybe look at like Wall, I guess. And that probably is like the go-to one, right? Wall, Chris. But like, is Christian Wood, I mean, he's putting up 24 points a game, but I don't know if that's that like just like him just shooting like 56% from the field kind of level. Is that why? So I don't know. I mean, it really depends who plays, right? That's what's going to make the difference in this game.
Yeah, if Harden plays, he's the butcher for both of us. Like, he's a rare guy that we let both of us do. Think about Wall, though, if we're going to talk about Harden not playing. The guys that Brogdon typically struggles with the most are really quick guards because he's not quite there laterally. He's okay up and down, but he's not quite there laterally on defense. I think Wall can beat him pretty easily. And, you know, as good as Turner's been rotating from the weak side, pick and roll defense, he can help with some of that. But that means Schroeder's going to be open. That means Christian Wood on the roll is going to be open, right? So even without Harden, I think Wall and Wood are going to present enough fits that they'll be a good butcher, especially because the Rockets' offense is just potent in general. But if Harden plays, it's him. He's the best offensive player maybe ever. So who knows?
Okay, ever. Well, Will Chamberlain might be the best offensive player ever. Or Jordan, but yes, I get what you mean. Okay, so we'll just – you want to just kind of pass on butchers then because
it's hard if he plays. But if he does – I mean, Christian Wood deserves a note here, but I think if Harden doesn't play, it's all Wall to me. I mean, he's just
– Okay. I mean, Wood's averaging almost 24 points per game, so that's why.
So good.
He's just getting a lot of opportunity too. It helps. So then X-factor-wise, I mean, I think you kind of said your Brogdon thing. I think for me – this team is not deep. I mean, they are just
no.
Like, so when you get after like Eric Gordon, you start naming guys that obviously you know Cousins is, but like he's not the Cousins he was. But then you're playing like they played Deshaun Tate, who I'm not even sure if that is. Daniel House obviously is a name, mainly is a name because he tried to sneak somebody in during the bubble. Sterling Brown is also a name, but again, it becomes a really, really not deep team after the starting five. Now they play their stars a lot when they do play, right? Harden plays 37. Wallace played 37 minutes a game versus Wood 36. Dude, Tucker 34. But to me, I'm going to use my bench one on this because I think that's where the Pacers just could kind of pull away from this team. If it can kind of keep it even with the starters, they can use their bench unit to kind of just run them off the court, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the Rockets play their starters a ton, so the bench has very limited opportunity to do a lot of success. Like Harden
in that 11-minute stretch, whatever, probably second quarter, it could really push them. Especially, you know, get a plus 10 or 11 there.
Brogdon's my X factor for the reasons I said earlier. He's got to either defend Harden or Wall, depending. I mean, he'll guard whichever is the best player for the other team and control the offense. But McConnell, also sneakily important to control these benchers. And McConnell's having a good season.
Yes,
so
he is.
That's a good one. But yeah, Brogdon, if he's exerting so much effort to slow those guys down that he can't run the offense effectively or hit shots, they probably don't have a chance. So they need a big Brogdon game to beat the Rockets. And they got one last year. They almost beat them in Houston, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to pick a win for the Pacers in this game.
Wow. The Rockets are interesting. They've only beaten, they're 2-2, but both their wings are against the Kings. So, like, we haven't really seen them.
I just don't think, to be honest, I think they're too, I think they can score a lot of points, but they play almost no defense. And to me, I'm not sure who's going to play Wednesday. I feel like there'll be somebody not playing either Wall or,
that's possible.
Harden. One of the play they for sure will win. And I think, and I just think, I think the Pacers, this is the kind of team where, like, if you just, like, are high energy and want it, you could beat them in a way. I mean, that's kind of how Portland beat them on, was it
Friday? They could trade Harden any day this week, too.
Yeah, true. I just, yeah, I just think that it's just, they're just, the Rockets are too out of a team, and the Pacers, this is the kind of the Pacers beat. Remember when they beat the Lakers, what was it, 2 years ago, and that night Lakers, like, were going to trade half their team for Davis and didn't, and they just beat them because basically, like, half the LA team was mad. That's, Pacers just take advantage of these teams who are, like, sort of a little bit, you know, not stable, because the Pacers are just a stable team that's not worrying about, you know, who's going to get moved here or there, and they just know how to kind of exploit those kind of teams. Night in, night out, I think.
Yeah. I still think the Rockets are going to win because, again, I'm very high on James Harden's ability as a player. But if he doesn't play, the Pacers have a great shot because he might not play. Who
knows? I mean, I think he could put a 50. They could probably still beat him, frankly.
Have they ever won a game that James Harden actually plays?
Yeah, they beat him with Paul George one of those years.
Oh, that was a while ago.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm trying to think when I feel like they beat him before another time.
Look, I don't know.
all right, well, you go with that. We're going to move on to our next game, which is against the Phoenix Suns to take on the Suns Saturday.
First in the league, Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, first in the league. They play them Saturday night in Indianapolis again. Suns
are five. This is a big game. This is the last game before the long road trip.
This is a big game. The Suns are 5-1. They are 8th in offensive rating and 2nd in defensive rating, which is, we'll see if that holds. The Suns, let's see, they do, it is a back-to-back for them. They are in Detroit on Friday in Indiana on Saturday. So that is a nice break for the Pacers there. The Suns are obviously the new look Suns with Chris Paul. Without Ricky Rubio now, but they're basically led by Booker. Mikal Bridges, Ayton, Paul are the big four. And I think they start Crowder right at the stretch four, I guess.
Yes, they've been going Crowder, Paul, Ayton, Bridges, and Booker. Correct.
So, yeah, my first thought on the Suns is Chris Paul just, like, wins games for you and makes things better. You know, just improves your team's ceiling. And then, obviously, Ayton is kind of a pain to deal with every 11 rebounds per game. And Booker, I don't know who's going to guard him. Probably another tough matchup for Brogdon.
Yeah, the Suns are interesting because they were awful on D last year. And Chris Paul comes in, and, like, their offense is going to be perfect with him. Like, perfect fit with Booker, can set up all these shooters they have. Ayton's a good role man. Their bench is pretty good. They smoked the Pacers in the bubble last year. We saw what this team could do in actualized. Or he's really helping out is their defense. Their defense is 2nd in the entire NBA this year. They are limiting other teams' three-point attempts. 2nd in the league, only allowing 28 per game. And 3rd in percentage at 30. So maybe that gives a little bit. Maybe some luck there early in the season. That's always true with these early season net ratings. But that's the attempts being low is a process thing. That can maintain. So the Pacers might have to live at the rim this game. Now, here's an advantage for the Pacers finally this week. And I guess this is true for the Rockets. I probably should have talked about Sabonis more for that game. But they can really pound Ayton with Sabonis or even Turner. Who knows? If Jay Crowder's on Sabonis, they can really pound Sabonis. So this could be a good chance for Sabonis to have a big game and kind of exploit – where I think the Suns' biggest hole is they have absolutely no rim defense on this roster. So they're good, and they're really good on D. They have Chris Paul leading that. They have a great offense, but I think Sabonis just absolutely slaughters their lineup, just given what he's good at.
So do you think Chris Paul is going to be on Brogdon or on Vic?
Good question. Booker's not a good defender. I think Booker's going to be on Vic. I think that's right. Just how it'll be.
Right, and so this might be a nice game for Vic, to be honest, in my kind of thing, right? We have to remember that
– also could be a nice game for Booker.
Yeah, it could be, too. I mean, although I think they'll probably put Brogdon on Booker and then put Vic on Paul because Paul's a little –
what are the odds we see Aaron Holiday on Chris Paul for size reasons, even?
Oh, that could make sense, too. I mean, yeah. Chris Paul might cook him,
though. But I think Aaron Holiday will probably end up on Jake
Crow. I mean, Kelbert is playing really well for them, too, so that's also going to be a tough matchup. We'll see if he holds his three-point percentage at 50%, obviously. But
the Suns are legit. There's no way around it. They are
good. Yeah, they are a really good team.
I was very low on the – not low, but I was lower on the Suns than most who cover the league.
But then I talked you into it, right? I talked you
into
being
on – I still put him 10th. I'm going to be wrong. Oh.
Who did I talk you into? What team did I talk you into then?
You talked me into the Warriors at 8.
No, I talked you into the Suns at 7.
You did not talk me into the Suns.
Whatever. Butcher-wise, I think I'll let you make the case for Booker. I think I would go with Chris Paul. He might have, you know, a 14 assist night, especially if they throw Aaron Holiday on him and could put up, you know, a 17 and 14 or 17 and 12 kind of game.
He's so special. Just master orchestrator of offense, can hit shots from everywhere. The game is never too fast for him, never too slow. He's just masterful manipulator. Him and Sabonis together would be insane. Like, that would be the best.
It almost be like him and David West together in a way.
Yeah. I didn't want to pick Booker. I wanted to pick Chris Paul because I love Chris Paul.
Oh, well, Booker, sorry about that.
It's okay. Booker's still ridiculous. Obviously, his scoring output speaks for itself. The thing about Booker that I think the Pacers will try to exploit is he's been pretty turnover prone this year. 6 a game for one guy is pretty crazy. It is a lot. So he can obviously light you up from everywhere, shooting 57% on twos, can hit a pull-up three from literally anywhere on the court. Just a fantastic basketball player, right? There's a reason he literally carried the Suns to the bubble run last year. But he just coughs it up just enough that I think they can stymie him or make him just ineffective enough that I would have picked Chris Paul as my butcher. But obviously Booker's go-off potential is so high. Ayton's good. Ayton can roll, and Duncan is getting there on D. He's a masterful rebounder, but doesn't kind of just fit in a box. It doesn't scare me enough as the Pacers. Bridges, amazing defender, but limited in general. Hitting half his threes this year, his effectiveness will drop. Jake Crowder killed the Pacers in the playoffs last year for the Heat. We'll see what he can bring. So I think they have enough, like, good matchups, and their bench is pretty deep. Saric is good. Javon Carter's good. Campaign's been really good this year. That they, again, they're going to be really tough to beat, but I think Chris Paul's is such a master at leading any group, and if Booker goes off, it's just over because Chris Paul's that good.
Yeah, so I already did my – I think it's Vic for this game. Who is your X-Factor, Sabonis?
Sabonis, yeah. Okay. If he can dominate Ayton, which I think he can, and Dario Saric is playing backup center for them, Dario Saric is good, but he's only like 6'8", 6'9". That is where I think they can catch up some post advantage and stay in this game. Suns are good, but they're actually a pretty decent matchup for the Pacers. I think the Pacers – I picked win before the season, and you picked the loss, so we'll see.
I think win this time, though. I think they go 2-1 this week by winning both home games, in my opinion.
I think they go 1-2, lose in New Orleans, lose to Houston, and beat the Suns. This is a huge game again because right after this, they go 2 Sacramento, 2 Golden State, 2 Portland, 2 Phoenix, and 2 the Clippers. So
this is going to – I mean, big game. We're finally going to reach the point where we're starting to see some real tests of the new coach before we finish up this podcast. I think that's my theme for this week and really going forward. You know, the first week, they had some easy opponents. We had some – the team, you know, they blew the Boston game. Let's say they had some mistakes down there.
But they beat a good team, which is important, I think.
Yeah, but now we're going to really see some tests of, like,
right,
he doesn't have Warren, so how's he going to play the lineups? What's he going to do? You know, how's he going to push his team? Because, you know, they got to – basically, right now, the goal is to survive till Lamb comes back. You know what I mean? No, I mean, I mean, really, until they get Lamb, let's say they don't get Lamb probably until – like in early February. I think that's probably a decent bet right now for Lamb to actually be like playable for 25 minutes at that point. So that I'm looking probably at a, you know, 15-20 game stretch where they don't want to end up being, you know, 7-13. They probably want to end up being, you know, 12-8 would be a nice little pace there. You know, at one point, you know, if they beat New York, I would say, oh, maybe they can have like a really good start. But with Warren out, I worry that their start's going to be sort of like usual. But they need to be hanging around, I think, within that, you know, 4-7 range. Really, as we finish the first half of the season, to have any shot at trying to get to a spot where they can win a first round playoff series. So,
and if they're 500 at the end of their road trip, I would actually be pretty impressed.
I mean, yeah,
they have a tough run of games coming up. They really needed that next win.
Let's say they did this week. I will say I don't think Sacramento and Golden State are that good, but a back to back makes it harder in general. But
yeah,
I would agree with you. I mean, they to me the East has had some slow starts, so that's helped them, right? They got to a better start than a lot of the better teams in the East did, right? Like, you look around, like, Milwaukee's right now is the 9th seed, and that's not going to hold for much longer.
Right.
They have some margin for error, but, you know, when January ends, they need to be still in the firmly in the 4-7 range for me to feel confident about where they could end up. And so it's going to be a nice little test the next couple of weeks for this.
It is. Hopefully they can keep on the right track this coming week with some tough opponents, Tatum's the only superstar they've gone against this week. They've got some studs.
Superstar every night, pretty much, it feels like.
We'll see. Yeah. If Sabonis wants to be considered in that tier, this will be a week for him to show it.
Or Brogdon.
Or Brogdon. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. So you can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers on Twitter. You can follow Tony at TeasedNBA, me at FreeMadam5. We will bring you 5 shows this week. I'll be doing all the game breakdowns. Tony will be the game previews. So look for those podcasts this week. That if they're Locked On Pacers podcast, I really hope by the time this podcast, the Colts have actually made the playoffs, but we'll see. And we'll see you guys again tomorrow.